We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I got a bad feeling about this.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Why didn't I take the blue pill?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Tackling life's most important questions. This is the Don Johnson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Don Johnson Show. My name is Don. Great to have you along today on Immaculate Heart Radio. I always say that it's a very special day. I don't know. It's a little hiccup I have when I broadcast. When I look ahead to the show, I'm like, oh, it's a very special day. No, today really is a very special day because we have as co-host today, Timmery Millington. Timmery, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Don.
Lots to talk about, Timmery. I got to share this quick story with you, though. And just I want you to just reassure me that I'm not totally crazy or paranoid. So here's what happened just minutes ago before the show. So just to give us a little background. First of all, my wife and I watched this movie the other day on the intense electronic surveillance that governments and businesses do of us these days. Okay, so everything that is out there is put into a big data vault and it's went through by some program. Anyway, I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. You know, hopefully nobody in power, you know, abuses that or anything. And then I was reading this book about the surveillance and I didn't.
They learned about me?
So that's all background. So earlier this week, I am on a different radio program as a guest, had this wonderful conversation on a different program on a different network. Sometimes it's okay to listen to other networks than Immaculate Heart. I don't recommend it, but every so often it's okay. And so I'm on this other network and it's one of those satellite shows. You know,
okay,
you know, it's
yeah.
Like it's not over the air. You have to have a satellite subscription. And I do not have one.
I don't have access.
Right. So I hadn't heard. Anyway, somebody heard me on the show. In fact, it was producer Jim who just left the studio here. Producer Jim heard me on this other show and he emailed me. He said, hey, I heard you this morning. That was great. You know, good job. Enjoyed the show. And I'm like, hey, thanks, Jim. I said, I've never actually heard the show because I don't have satellite. And he said, yeah, he was describing, you know, how he subscribes to it or got it free with his car or something. I don't know. Anyway, in my email back to him, literally this is just a couple hours ago now, Timmery, in my email back to him, I said, maybe I'll have to get this satellite service. And that was the end of it. You know, just a smiley face. I mean, realistically, I'm not going to pay for any more subscriptions in my life. Okay. Within an hour, I started getting several calls. Yes, from that satellite service. What am I to make of this?
From your email.
I don't, well, because is it coincidence? I don't know. I've literally never got a call from them before.
That's some focused marketing right there.
I mean, am I being paranoid? Did they read my email? Is it just, I don't know. It could be just a coincidence.
And I thought the Facebook ads creep me out when they're asking for dancers to donate their eggs. That's even worse because they're violating your email address.
Oh, totally.
So what's in your email? Yeah.
Well, yeah. And so that struck me as odd. It was like a local number that called me trying to sell me this service.
Hold on. Listeners, do not worry. If for some reason we start talking about a topic that was on your mind 30 seconds
That's
ago,
right.
We're not monitoring your brain.
That's correct. We did not read your email. And I don't know. I'm not accusing anyone of reading. It could have been a complete coincidence, but it struck me as odd that that was the first time I had ever got a phone call from them. And it was, you know, within an hour. I don't know, Timmery, I'm just saying. All right, lots to get to. Here's an interesting story from USA Today. And I love the headline on, well, I don't love the headline, but it definitely caught my eye. Survey, sleeping together before a first date is okay, but cracked phones are a put off. you look like, what? Sleeping together, having sex before even the first date is now apparently a thing. Now, would you consider yourself part of the millennial? I would consider you part of the millennial.
I am part of the millennial generation.
I'm not. I'm more of a Gen Xer. And, you know,
I'll accept that.
Yeah, we have our problems with Gen X, there's no doubt. And we have had since the 80s. But I don't remember this being a thing. Like, you know, premarital sex, yes, promiscuous sex, but getting like introduced to a person by going to bed with them now seems to be a thing. And I'm looking at the stats here. In fact, here it is. 48% are likely to have sex before a first date. And 34% of singles have indeed had sex.
So they're saying of all the people, though, who are single or in dating, 48% of them are millennials. Who will say, sure, I'll have sex before the first date. So they're showing that the rest, the 50-something percent, are all age ranges, right? And they're showing essentially that people who are on a little bit more of the older side, not the millennials, have kind of learned from this and are like, no, I'm not interested in pre-first date sexual intimacy.
That just strikes me as flabbergasting, though, isn't it? That almost, well, 34% of singles have, it says. And I don't know how big this is.
Before their first date. Well, these are called the one-night stands, the hookups.
The hookups,
you know,
yeah.
I think that this has become so incredibly sensationalized, Don. And I think it's a result of television. We're constantly watching these TV shows, movies, which no diss on TV and movies. I think they're great. But sometimes I think
except
when
for like most of them.
Most of them, yeah. Yeah.
All right, now keep going, Timmy.
I have my favorites.
I watch a few myself. I'll grant you.
But I feel like so many people sensationalize what they see in media as that being the end all be all. It reminds me of the Cosmopolitan magazine writer who came out not too long ago talking about how she helped the abortion movement to hijack the women's movement. And she talked about how in Cosmopolitan magazine, they would write all the time about these stories of a girl who traveled to France from the United States. And she met this man in a coffee shop and it turned into this romantic one-night stand. Well, that's not that far away from what we see in the vast majority of movies. Maybe it's incorporated a little bit more so into daily life, but I feel like so many people love the idea of this wooing excitement that they're willing to kind of see, well, where will this go? I've met this person. Well, is he interested in me? How far can we take it? And we focus on, and we talk about this sometimes, this hedonistic mindset of we just start to focus on the pleasure of the moment and we get lost.
Now, what about this, though? It seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, this is how I understood what they were saying. It seems like pre-first date, it was almost like looking at a picture of a person. Like, this is how I'm going to understand whether or not I even want to spend more time with you. I'm going to go have sex with you, like as if almost like a handshake would have been, or I look at your picture on, well, I guess in the past we wouldn't have had social media, but yeah, you know, that part now involves sex. And after that, if that goes, you know, medium at least, mm-hmm. I'm willing to go for coffee. Right? No. And then I'm going to look at your phone. And apparently if you have a cracked phone, it's not going to go any farther.
This is what's so fascinating because I totally get the cracked phone issue. If you have a cracked phone, like, man, you just haven't taken care of it. I don't know.
So good.
I think that this is just like the perfectionist side of me coming out. It's like there's spiders on your phone. Can you see what you're reading on your phone? But I don't understand the comparison. What people are saying, though, is that it's more of a turnoff to see someone with a cracked cell phone than it is to have sex with them on the first, well, before the first date.
Yeah, the sex thing is sort of like, well, I'm going to do this with you, and if it goes okay, at least, you know, it's like the introductory thing. I don't know you at all, but we're going to go have sex, and then I'm going to go the rest, you know, then we're going
to
actually maybe
get to know each other.
That was just the introduction, and it's just so flabbergasting. The phone thing cracks me up, though, Timmy. It's like, Now that you've sort of explained it to me, I actually see that. Now, my poor wife had to walk around with a cracked phone forever.
Aww.
She didn't have a good case on it, and it fell.
Yes,
and we're like,
happened.
Well, we're not to that point in the plan. I'm not, you know, we just don't
yes.
have $7 million to
I've
just,
been there.
You know, so sorry, for the next few months, you're going to have a cracked phone. And then, you know, when the plan came around, we got our new one. But I can kind of see where it's like showing up with smoker's breath and stained teeth. Like, oh, you don't know how to take care of yourself. you can't even keep your phone. I get that. All right. I must say I was a little cynical about the phone thing, but now that you've cleared it up for me.
Well, and thinking about it too, we live in a time that's so focused on production. And I think that part of the sex before the first date mindset is we're so busy, we don't necessarily have time for a committed relationship. We might fear it. It might get in the way of our work or social life.
Sure.
So we avoid it. And the cell phone, in a sense, represents someone who's busy on top of things. Think about the typical iPhone. I mean, I have to be honest. I have my Google Drive for my radio show. I have my email set up. I have my banking accounts. I mean, I have everything on my cell phone.
The phone is everything, yeah.
And so maybe this correlation has to do with, well, they're not that busy. I don't know. Maybe
I think you're giving them
there.
Way too much credit. Way too much credit, Timmy. I think that if you, how are you going to see my selfies I post on Instagram through your cracked phone? I think that's more what it is. It's more like, maybe I'm too cynical.
I think getting back to the point, though, there's a real concern when people are at the point where they're willing to hook up before they even know anything about this other person.
Nothing, yeah.
I mean, literally knowing nothing. This is a total mindset of complete and utter casual sex. And, you know, there's this article by Matt Walsh on The Blaze. And he talks about this. And he talks, and I love Matt Walsh. For those who don't know, he's actually Catholic. I think he might have been homeschooled at some point. I was homeschooled, and I'm totally normal.
He does have those tendencies, doesn't he?
But Matt Walsh is awesome in the sense that even if he's incorrect at times, he calls things how he sees them. And he comes down hard on this. What is casual about sex, essentially?
Yeah. Hold that thought, Timmery. We are going to come back to this. You're listening to The Don Johnson Show. Timmery Millington is here with me today. When we come back, what's the deal with having sex before the first date? Before I get to know anything about you, it's okay to hook up. That's what we're examining with the Millennials, the USA Today article. We'll be right back on The Don Johnson Show. Stick around.
Now on DVD and digital download, a story about finding truth, meaning, and beauty in the last place they expected.
I can't become Catholic. What, am I insane? There's no way.
A film to encourage your faith and help you reach out to others.
I thought, this is just nonsense. These people are crazy. Atheism is much more rational.
Convinced, featuring over 20 of today's most interesting and articulate Catholic voices, including Jennifer Fulweiler, Scott Hahn, Abby Johnson, and Patrick Madrid. Get convinced now at convincedmovie.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Don Johnson Show. Timmery Millington is here. We are talking about this survey that was recently showcased in USA Today, among other places. The headline is, sleeping together before a first date is A-OK, but cracked phones are a put-off. Well, we figured out the whole cracked phone thing. I think we got that. And maybe people aren't entirely crazy for that one. Close. But what's the deal? Hooking up before I know anything else about you. This is like the introductory thing. Like, this is how in the past we might meet for coffee and, okay, you know, you're a quiet talker or something. Mm-hmm. And I just can't deal with that or whatever, right? Like, you drink decaf. No, I'm sorry. We're just not going to get along. I don't know what it is. Whatever, you know, like that introductory stuff where you're like, well, I don't know. We just really didn't click very much. Mm-hmm. And I get that. Now, that introductory thing is sex.
Yes.
Now, Timmery, you were talking about a Blaze article by Matt Walsh before we went.
I think that Matt just hits the nail on the head here when he's talking about how, what is casual about sex? And he keeps asking this. And this is what I think is so fundamental to the whole conversation. We have to ask ourselves, have we become so desensitized to sexuality being in our faces everywhere, from pornography that we have on our cell phones, our televisions, our computers, easy access, to the provocative things we see in movies and TV sometimes? Have we become so desensitized? And I'll add this, and people don't like to talk about it, but stimulated in a sense, that we don't think as much about the physical act as we used to. And it's so sad, because while we may justify this mindset, what I come back to at the end of the day is these people don't understand, even if they tried to deny it, the chemical and emotional bond, especially for women, that is taking place each time they engage in sexual intimacy. I remember just a few years ago working at a college university, these girls would come to me upset and heartbroken at times. And I could tell you the difference between a girl who had just gotten over a breakup where she was sexually active,
yep,
and where she wasn't. The connection, the ability to move on was a tremendous difference.
Oh, that's an excellent point. You talk about how they don't understand. It's pretty fundamental. I don't know. Do you remember? You're probably too young for this, but several years ago there was a movie called Idiocracy. Did you ever see Idiocracy?
Someone was just telling me I have to watch that movie.
It's been a long time since I've seen it, and there were definitely some things they could have done better, I thought. Good premise. But anyway, the idea is this guy gets thrust into the future, and suddenly he's the smartest guy around. And basically what had happened, the idea was they just became ignorant of everything. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, they were pouring a Gatorade substance on their crops, and nobody drank water anymore. The only fluid they knew of was this Gatorade type substance. And
but it has electrolytes.
Right, exactly. And they wondered, why is everybody sick and obese, and why can't we grow any crops? And the guy's like, well, because you're not using water, right? And when I think about this, I think this is what these young girls are talking about. They have no idea what the human being is. Like, mm-hmm. they have no idea what they are.
Yes.
And therefore, they have no idea what sex should be. Yes, there's a should be, but what it is. I mean, it's like they are running around just completely ignorant. I get the sense that they look at their body as something extraneous to who they are. It's just like a tool.
I'm so glad you said that, because when I knew we'd be talking about this, the first thing that came to mind is we're missing this mind-body connection.
Yeah.
It's gone. And you know what's so interesting, Don, is when I speak to people about chastity, I don't come in from the perspective of, let's talk about, because this is God's plan. It is. But you've got to build up to that point. Show them how it's God's plan. Have we talked about the norepinephrine, the serotonin, the oxytocin? These are all chemicals that the body is creating in the sexual act, which also are released when we're looking at pornography as well.
Right.
And what's so important with these chemicals is that they bond together. They help you to overlook the faults in the other person. They create a sense of peace and comfort. And all of these are so fundamental to a mindset of overall well-being. And people see this and they learn this for the first time and they're amazed. They go, no wonder it's so wonderful, but also no wonder it's so challenging when there's a separation from this person that I've been bonded to.
Yeah, you've been physically bonded to them.
Chemically,
it's like a thing. But there is, I think, and this is why the Catholic teaching on this is so important, because it's true, but because there's two, I think, almost equally bad approaches then to who we are as humans. One is more of a Gnostic view, where, mm-hmm. and this is sort of what people are, they're practically Gnostics in many ways. Like, it's my mind, it's my thoughts, it's my emotions, actually, primarily, that are me. And so when I'm feeling sad, I'm a bad person. When I'm feeling good, I'm, you know, this sort of thing. The body's just a tool to be used. And then there's the materialist, and this maybe is not so common anymore, but that you are your body. Right, that you're just a meat machine, to use a crass
term. Your desires.
Yeah, your physical desires. And so what my body wants is who I am. And actually, you do see this a little bit in the transgender homosexual movement, mm-hmm. where they equate themselves with their bodily desires, it seems, right? Whereas the Catholic view is, no, we're not just our bodies, and we're not just our souls. We're a union, and you cannot separate those.
Well, and that's what sets us apart from the animals,
right.
Don. You know, what does it mean to be made in God's image and likeness? If God is love, we too are made for love. And the way that we are made in his image of love is that we have intellect and we have free will. A cow sees another cow in heat on the other side of the street. That cow is crossing the street and not looking both ways. A teenage boy sees a pretty woman on the other side of the street. He's got to go to the crosswalk, press the button, walk across the street. And I'm sorry, dude, you've got to ask for her number. You've got to get to know her. But I say this because we have intellect. We don't just see a raw piece of meat and run at it. We have to go through the motions. We have to marinate it. We have to cook it. We barbecue it. We don't put it in the oven, right? I mean, if you're making a steak, you know, you have all these elements that set us apart from the animals. That intellect, we can come to know something. We can reason to it and then freely choose it.
Yeah.
And this is what's so fundamental about the Catholic side of sexual ethics.
And it's also the good news of Jesus, and this is something John Paul II really emphasized. And if you look at Genesis and what happened at the fall, I mean, you know, we get caught up in the, well, was Genesis history or whatever? Well, that I think the main point of that Genesis story with Adam and Eve and naming the animals, and he could not find a mate among the animals.
Yes.
It's very much a distinction between humans and what it means, yes, to be made in the image of God and the animals, right? The animals do what their physical desires tell them to do.
Yes.
And humans do not. And what's interesting is after the fall, I think the point of that story is we became a little bit more animal-like. Like, yes, we needed to be protected now because I am more inclined as a sinful man to objectify women. Right. Yes. And so now we need clothes and now we need to take steps. I'm more inclined to follow my animal instincts, if you will. Mm-hmm. Well, the good news of Jesus is that we are free, right, from that. We're going the other direction now. True love, which in a way was harmed at the fall, whereas, mm-hmm, you freely give of yourself to another person. Now it's possible again. I mean, this is such good news to our culture that you do not have to follow the instincts. You who are addicted to porn, you who are, you know, so sad because you think that you have to make your body available to that guy as an introductory thing. No, you don't. Right? No, you don't. Yeah. True love is possible. And so, yeah, for a culture that thinks sex is something you do to introduce yourself to someone. And you talked about it, Timmy, the pain and the suffering and the, I was reading a stat today about the second leading cause of death among teenage girls is suicide.
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible in America, yeah, right?
Because women are told that, and women are made fun of, in fact, when they get hooked up on this physical intimacy. And so often these young women lie pretending like it didn't matter because their friends tease them, oh, you're being needy, you're being dependent. No, God, you know, you mentioned before that we have this animal-like instinct, and in some ways it's part of our human nature, right? This natural desire to reproduce, to,
sure,
eat. It's part of continuing our race. It's put there for a reason, and why is that? And that's where we see this separation between having sex and babies. We've completely gotten rid of all of the consequences. So, of course, we have this mindset that sex is casual, but in reality, it's not. It's made for the creation of a human person, partially, of course, pleasure and the creation of the human person, drawing the two people together in this union. But it's so fundamental that it can create a person and then draw those two people to then raise a person for years to come.
Yeah.
That's not casual.
No, and you think about how godlike that is. Like, to be made in the image of God, to have, like you talked about, free will and the ability to give yourself to someone and all of these non-animal things. And then to actually be able to procreate, like,
yes,
to actually create another human life.
Yep.
And I have a whole talk on this, by the way, DonJohnsonMinistries.org, if you're looking for more info on this. And I'm glad you brought up the contraception thing.
Yes.
Timmery, because I'm actually starting a documentary project as we speak. We're going to have to get you on camera on this. But the contraception thing cannot be disassociated from all the rest,
yes,
of these arguments we're having, don't,
exactly,
you think? I mean, that's what started it all.
This is where it begins.
Yeah.
And I think this is why so many people are struggling with the topic of homosexuality is, yeah, when we, and I remember years back when I was having a hard time piecing together why we disagreed with homosexuality. I understood that it was different and I understood that it was wrong, but I felt like I couldn't justify or create a case for it. And it wasn't until I really, really understood the argument for why hormonal contraception was harmful for the body, the woman, and just the marriage as a whole, that all of a sudden a right ordered sexuality with regard to people who are struggling with same sex attraction, that began to step into place and be understood better.
Yeah, I don't think you can make that point too strongly, that if you want a strong argument against things like same sex marriage, you have to have the contraception argument as part of it.
Yes.
And a large part of the quote culture war that's happening, the conservative side, if you will, failed largely because I think they didn't bring that in. So that's a great point. You're listening to the Don Johnson Show. I'm here with Timmery Millington. We will be right back after this short break. Stick around. Hey everybody. Welcome back to the Don Johnson Show. I'm here with Timmery Millington today. So, I don't know if you caught the Grammys. Did you catch the Grammys?
You know, I saw little clippets after, but didn't watch. Were you able to watch
it? I have not watched the Grammys for years.
No.
Well, here's how I watch television, honestly. There's a couple of shows during the week. My wife and I will sit down, and they're DVR'd or whatever. Mm-hmm. They find them on Netflix. But live programming? Never.
Whoa, who does that?
Never, right? And I'm not going to record the Grammys. I mean, it's like 20 hours long. So I do like everyone else, and you catch the YouTube highlights,
yes,
right? That's
exactly
how you watch late night TV. Well, one of the highlights this year was a young hip-hop artist called Chance the Rapper. Now, you're a lot younger than I am. Are you familiar with Chance the Rapper? Is this your...
He's newly come onto my radar.
All right. Well, he is big. He won like 3 Grammys. New Artist of the Year... Couple things about Chance the Rapper. One, he seems about as explicitly Christian as any artist I've ever seen on stage. I don't know if you caught his performance, but he's doing like a How Great Thou Art, not that him, but a similar thing, a very Jesus-centered performance at the Grammys. And he's one of the biggest, I was going to say, selling artists. He actually gives a lot of his music away for free. He does. He's not even signed with a label.
This is what's so amazing. He's the very first artist to win a Grammy without selling a single physical copy of his music. It's all online. And this is, I think, both revolutionary in terms of this mindset of everyone wants something for free. He's found a way to make it happen. And he's totally sensationalized to the point that people love his music. Now, I'm not into rap. I don't get it, but...
That's all right, though. I'm not a huge rap fan, although more so than you might think. I don't know if you knew this about me. I spent many years actually doing inner city urban youth work.
Yes.
In East Palo Alto and other places. And so I really did come away with a new appreciation, mm-hmm. not only of African-American culture in general, but rap music. So, you know, my daughters and I have been known to lip sync to a little Eminem. Now and again. Now, I actually bring that up consciously because when people hear that I let my daughters listen to an Eminem song, a lot of times they freak out because if you're familiar with Eminem, he's been known to drop a few F-bombs and that kind of thing, right? And so there's a language issue. Well, here's the thing. Chance the Rapper also has a few vulgarities in his lyrics. Okay. And I don't know. I haven't listened to enough of Chance to really know what all he says. But it's interesting to me. And this is, I want to give you another story here, Tim Reese, just so we can balance this out. How are we to approach this guy who, in his story, is he seemed like he had some sort of Christian upbringing, but then went away pretty hard, mm-hmm. got into drugs, got into the stuff that young, and this is not a racist thing, but young African American culture has a lot of issues. So does white culture. But if you go spend some time in inner cities, there's a lot of problems. And so he went and got involved with a lot of that stuff that a lot of those guys do. But you know what? He came out of it. And he came out of it because of Jesus. And he's very open about coming out of it because of Jesus. Is he perfectly cleaned up enough that you could, you know, set him up there on Sunday at Mass? Or, you know, I don't know that. Mm-hmm. But how are we to approach a guy like Chance? We say, oh, you know what? I don't want anything to do with it. I don't like the music, right? And because he drops a few words in there. Now, before you answer, Timmery, I just got to throw out one more story here. This is from the Washington Post, actually did a big thing on this. So one of the most popular hip-hop artists in the country, a more standard sell-your-CDs kind of guy, is Sho Baraka. And I'm not overly familiar, but he is big. His last album, The Narrative, debuted in the top 10 on iTunes. Also, explicitly Christian guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To the point where Lifeway Christian Stores, which is the bookseller of the Southern Baptist Association, so very conservative. My book just barely made it into Lifeway. Let's put it this way, okay? And I think they looked at the Peter Kraft thing on the back and said, you know, do we want this Catholic-ish
too
book?
Catholic.
Yeah, I don't know. But it made it in. I don't want to. But they're, like, pretty hardcore about what they let in. But Sho Baraka's album was there until just this past week or two when it got pulled. Here's why it got pulled. And if you're if you don't want the technical name for male anatomy, turn your radio down now just for a few minutes, because this is why it got pulled. So if you've got kids and you don't want to talk, I'm not going to say it in a vulgar way, because he didn't say it in a vulgar way, but it had the word penis in the song. And I, you know, I almost say, well, can we even say that on Mac of the Heart Radio? I don't know. I didn't. I just, it's one of those things.
I've not heard that one said on Mac.
I don't know. Maybe you can't. It's one of those things where you do it and you ask for forgiveness later.
I'll take care of bleep.
Well, but it's interesting because his album got pulled because it had that word in it. And so to me, this is the story. Like, if you just heard that,
do you
and
know
now
in
you're
context
super,
what was said?
Well, yes, I do. I'm going to share it with you right here. Here's the context. It was a song about how he had come out of a very sinful lifestyle. And here's the actual quote. He says, I was, and I'm not going to rap it for you because I don't want to put him down.
You
know,
you
I don't want to, I don't want to over, you know, I don't want to make him look bad. So my rapping, you know, he says, I was an insecure boy who just thought he was a genius, but always PO'd. That's because I thought with my penis. It's all strategic. I'm just asking for the reason. Share my faith on the track. I'm just exercising demons. Okay, so he's talking about how he, what we were talking about last segment, Timory, about the animal instinct. I let my physical desires drive me. This is the point of his song. And the common term for that, frankly, not even in just that culture, I've heard that phrase a lot in my life, yeah. And it's not like I'm hanging out with really, you know, really terrible people. But it's in a rap song. I can see how that would.
I think it's perfectly fitting in the song.
Make the point.
It
right?
Makes sense.
It makes sense, and it makes it in a way that you understand. He's following his animal desires. Now he doesn't. Now he's talking about, I've been delivered from that.
Well, he's being completely honest. This is what I was doing.
Yeah.
This is where I was going in my life. And you know what I actually appreciate about this? Not that your kid has to hear this. Totally
right.
Needs to be age appropriate. What I appreciate is that's something that can appeal to anyone. And I think people listening to his music are going to appreciate his honesty, even if they don't necessarily want to hear that word in a song, but they go, oh, well, how have I done that? Because this is a tendency that we have sometimes.
Right. And if he changed that to make it more suitable for, you know, 55-year-old white guys or whatever, and he actually tried, he put out an album that was much more generic. And he said, well, none of the people in my community listened to it. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Right? It was all this generic stuff that would play on your contemporary, you know, Christian station. And we know what that's like. It's like, and actually I saw a funny video. You've probably seen it too, Timory, about the Christian music industry where the people come, here's how to make a Christian music song. And they're like, give us a generic struggle, nothing too specific. Don't give us any generic struggle and then throw in, you know,
Jesus. Take the will
yeah. Exactly. Right. Something. Right. That's it. Mm-hmm. And put on your fedora and you're done. And that's how it works.
Hey, I love Christian music.
Hey, I do too.
But I see what you're seeing. You know, I think it comes back to what I appreciate hearing about this song. And Grant, I hadn't heard it before. Hearing the story, I think it appeals very well to the current generation. Millennials are well known for seeking authenticity.
Exactly.
They're the most marketed to, advertised to group. And you know what's funny is I actually easily get overwhelmed when I'm driving sometimes. And I see all of these ads on the sides of buildings and it just becomes overwhelming. And it's funny because in research, you look at this and young people are so tired of this. They want you to be authentic and they can spot it more easily when you're not being authentic.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that his brutal, or not even brutal, but just total honesty here helps people. It provokes them to think. He's realistic with what his experience was.
I couldn't agree with you more. And so there's two people that I think, or two groups of people perhaps, that I think we need to think about in this. So if you're picking up your phone right now, calling a Mac of the Heart Radio and say, did you hear what Don said on the radio? I ask you to just step back for a second.
Hey, I bleeped it out.
Good, yeah.
There, I did it again.
Here's the reason I bring it up. Because this song is not for you. Right?
No.
This song, you don't have to listen to this song. But there's two kinds of people that I think should and will appreciate it. And if they get the impression that Christians don't like this, that Christians don't listen to this, they're going to be turned off from Christianity, and that's a problem. So the two groups of people are, one, let's think about show. here. Here's a guy, maybe he's not perfect, maybe he uses language that we don't like, maybe Chance the Rapper does too, right?
Yes.
He hasn't achieved, you know, peak holiness yet. Neither have I. Neither have you.
None of us have. Yes.
He does some things that maybe you don't like. Okay, drop some words in there that maybe you don't like. You probably say some things he doesn't like.
Exactly.
Right? But let's think about them for a second. Are we going to sort of rain on their journey saying, you know what, here's where you were, here's where you are, and I don't like where you are? Mm-hmm. What is that saying to them? I mean, what are you saying to that kid who picked up the Show Baraka CD, or, well, he didn't pick up because who picks up a CD, but he downloaded it, right? And he's saying, oh, man, here's this guy. He's up there with the likes of Lecrae and all these.
Yes.
Lecrae's another one, by the way, a total Christian guy, who is telling us about Jesus. And are we going to be prudish?
Yeah. Honestly, are we going to be prudes here? I have a really hard time with that. And I think that it's something that we all have to be aware of as we're going through our constant conversion story, to be honest, or as we're working out our own salvation. There's a time where we really do have to cut ourselves off at times from maybe bad behavior, language, because it puts us in the near occasion to sin. But I think that we also should have a point where we can respect that certain means of evangelization are helpful for people. And I've got to say, I think that song would appeal to just about any 17-year-old boy, whether or not he's super well-formed or not, because this is just a natural experience that a lot of people go through.
Yeah, I think we need to look at the context. Now, well, let's look at the other side. When we come back, I do want to sort of bring the other side. I can see the perhaps danger in being too positive about these guys. Oh, what are we going to do? We're just going to let them say anything except, no, we're not saying that. But we've got to take another break. This is Don Johnson, Timory Militant on The Don Johnson Show on Immaculate Heart Radio. We will be right back after this short break. Stick around. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Don Johnson Show. My name is Don. I'm here with Timory Millington today. We did not watch the Grammys, but there were some great stories coming out of the Grammys. One was Chance the Rapper basically led a worship service right there from the Grammy stage, sent that out to millions of people. But not everybody's happy about that, because Chance has been known to say a curse word or two. And we actually have been talking about that in the context of another hip-hop artist, Show Baraka, who just got his album pulled from Lifeway Christian stores for using the term that he rhymed with genius for the male anatomy. And he used it in the context of, I don't allow my body to dictate my will anymore, basically, is what he was saying, if we wanted to get philosophical about it. And I thought he made a good point. And we've been talking about this, Timory, in the sense that evangelistically, we don't want to be too discouraging to these types of folks for two reasons. And I say two groups of people. One, for those people themselves. I mean, what does that do for their walk with Jesus when all they hear is from Christians is, oh, you can't do that.
Yes.
When they've already come so far, right? They're on a journey, and we can see where they've come from. And this is something I really learned working with inner city kids, right? Mm-hmm. When I took a cabin of inner city boys up for a week of camp, I had much different rules with those boys than I did for my own kids. Because my own kids had grown up in a far different context. So if my own kids would talk the way that those boys did, yeah, they'd be in trouble. No doubt. Or if they, you know, stole some stuff or were getting into fights all the times, like my boys did, they'd be in much more trouble than my cabin boys were.
Yes.
Because I can't expect you to come out of the context that you came out of, the culture. And some of them had really rough home lives. Pop you in a cabin with me and expect you just to be instantly the way I want you to be, right? It's not going to happen. And so, you know, if you can move during the week from not beating anybody up, maybe trying to clean up your language a smidge, you know, not stealing from me, great, right? I'm okay. I'm not going to freak out too much if there's still a cuss word or two in there, right? This sort of, well, I think we need to do that, like, culturally. Like, let's show a little bit of grace to some of these folks, because they're on a journey. And do we really want to be seen in the culture as, you know, just we're the people of no? Well, no.
I think this is where we talk about, you know, when you look at God, God reaches down and accommodates us so often. In like biblical terms, we refer to this as God's divine pedagogy. He's like a pedagogue, a teacher, reaching down and accommodating and working with his student where it's at. And then they have greater expectations of the student or the child in an earlier age. And you're showing this with the different groups of people, what they know, what they experience. And I think that we can show, in many senses, God's merciful love and really meeting people where they're at. That doesn't mean justifying their behavior.
That's a good point.
But that means we understand walking with them as they take those steps. I was just doing a radio interview on Norma McCorvey, who is the Roe of Roe versus Wade. She just died. And at one point, she has this conversion to the pro-life position. But guess what? Her pro-life position began with being okay with abortion the first trimester, but being ardently pro-life in those two trimesters. And I just thought it was so neat that people were willing to work with her where she was as she saw the importance of upholding life right then and there. And guess what? She had a total conversion to being 100% pro-life.
Yeah.
And so that's one of those examples where I think every single person in many ways is walking through some type of sin that they imperfectly justified to this day. And this is part of our journey.
Totally. I mean, yeah, just you think of yourself and your own journey. Are you exactly where God wants you to be?
Yeah. Or where you want yourself to be, even.
Well, right. Yes. Exactly right. I know I'm not, but I look back and I say, well, have we made some progress? Yeah, absolutely. Do we still have a long ways to go? I love that point you made, Timory. In fact, that's where I first used that illustration in a talk about how God, when you look at the Old Testament and how God dealt with people in the Old Testament, a lot of times that messes people up. Like, well, what's he doing? You know, is he allowing slavery? What's going on?
Why did Abraham lie and have multiple wives?
Well, but you look at the history of the world, and it is God's divine pedagogy. That's, he's like, he's working with them where they are.
Yes.
And that's what he does with everyone. And frankly, I think it would help us to view people more as individuals, like as people made in the image of God, and not as part of, you know, a political movement or a culture. Or let's just look at that person and look at ourselves, and let's try to interact this way. I think of a story I just saw. My kids are fans of The Voice, you know, the singing one. And one of the judges on there, it's crazy, I can't think of her name right now, but she's an OC girl, lead singer of No Doubt, and she's a judge on The Voice.
Is it Gwen Stefani?
Yes, Gwen Stefani, thank you. So Gwen Stefani's on The Voice. Well, Gwen grew up Catholic here in Orange County. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, because it's not, you know, you think of Gwen Stefani and No Doubt, I mean, they had the pop songs, but not exactly.
No Doubt was great.
Yeah, not exactly a religious type. No. You know, banned or anything. Mm-hmm. And she admits, no, you know, not religious at all, left the faith. She recently went through a divorce and some other things. And she's been very open. You look at some of her interviews leading up now, because she's been doing all this media for The Voice coming out again. And on one hand, you could look at her life and say, here's Gwen, she's divorced. And now I think it's, for all indications, she's living with one of the other judges, Blake Shelton. Okay. Mm-hmm. He, who also divorced his wife. And you look at that and I think, man, what a mess, right? I mean, all this divorce happening and the poor kids, and now they're living together, and you think, I get it, that you look at that and you say, man, couldn't we have some better role models, right? Mm-hmm. And as a sort of, you know, picture of the culture, I agree with you, right? Yes, absolutely. But then I look at Gwen and I think, if I'm going to go, you know, have coffee with Gwen, and she hasn't called or anything, so I don't think it's going to happen. But you look at her interviews, she's going to Mass now. She's taking her kids to Mass. She's been She's much more spiritual in the last couple of years. Her latest album is much more sort of religiously oriented, apparently. And she's just very open about this. So on one hand, I look at her and she says, you know, the only thing that got me through all these hard times these last couple of years is God. And me going back to the church. Now, is she still committing adultery? Yeah, it seems so, right? Is she still got some sin going on? Yeah. But I just think, you know, what part are we going to, like, focus on there, right? Like,
I agree with you.
Like, let's come alongside.
I think we have to see the good that people do and applaud them for it. but don't applaud the bad. And I think, and granted, I'll give an example here. For example, Lady Gaga, a while back, I think about a year, maybe 2 years ago now, posted a picture on her Instagram with her parish priest, and she wrote about the Eucharist and how much, like, this devotion to the Eucharist. And I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
So I posted it on social media, I reposted it, and man, I have to tell you, probably one of those moments where I received so much criticism for it. Yeah. And it's funny because I wasn't even upset about it. I was just surprised. Now, Grant, fast forward to today. I've seen Gwen Stefani do some really sacrilegious and horrific things.
Yeah.
And so looking back on it, sure, today I probably wouldn't repost something like that, seeing more of the things that she's done.
Or Lady Gaga you're talking about?
Yeah, sorry. Lady Gaga. Thank you. But I think at the moment, still, I look back and say, if someone's done something good, has spoken truth, we need to really be okay with that and be positive about it. And yes, still acknowledge the harms and the different things that they're doing in their lives, but let's focus on the good sometimes. Not that we're deleting all the bad, but let's uphold the good and the true.
And let's clarify what we're not saying. So we're not saying that you look at a person like Gwen Stefani and say, oh, well, I guess we should relax our notions of, you know, extramarital relations or whatever, right? Like, oh, we should, let's just not talk about those things anymore. Mm-hmm. Or let's just say that that's okay. That's not what we're saying. That's not what Timur is saying. That's not what I'm saying. We wouldn't say to Gwen, if she came to us, oh, you know, that's totally fine, you know. Hey, I'm so happy with where you... No, what Timur is saying, we celebrate what's good. I'm so glad that God has got... Because, you know, I mean, I think there's so many people out there, the culture's so broken.
Yes.
There's so many things, and this, I think, is what Pope Francis kind of, like, he's derided for a lot of things, I get that, but the good that he's, like, in our culture, pastorally, we've got all of these people with broken lives. Pastorally, we need to do something good for them.
One of my favorite things that he said within the first couple months of being Pope is he said, he told a bunch of his cardinals, smell with your sheep. And I will never forget when he said that, because he's doing what Jesus did in a sense. He's encouraging what Jesus said. Where Jesus went, he met and ate with tax collectors.
Yeah,
he didn't do the saying, hey, I approve of your fornication. Hey, I approve of your adulterous relationships. No, he saw them where they were. And I think the reason you and I are even talking about these topics is because we're saying, here's an opportunity for evangelization to open up a door to see truth and to draw on it. Say, okay, so you see the importance, Gwen Stefani, of going to church and how God's pulled you out of your dark moments. Well, how about now? Now, let's start to see, what does that church teach about marriage?
Right.
What does it teach? And how is the church so merciful in the sacrament of confession that no matter what you've done, as long as you seek forgiveness, you can have it?
Yeah. And there's always good news there, isn't there?
Yes.
Like, we think, oh, I don't want to talk to Gwen about it. But it's actually good news. Like, she's limited. And we all, the sin that we carry in our lives, it's limiting us. It's not something to be accepted or celebrated. It's limiting us. We want to be free of it. But we can do that. And I think this is what we're saying. We can do that without having to say that sin is okay. But we can also do that without having to ignore or even deride the good things that are happening in people's lives. I see this movement in hip hop music. And all of these amazing artists that are just, like, blatantly Christian. And yet the Christian culture is, oh, how come we're losing the culture? How are we? Or maybe those are our standard bearers and we're not recognizing it. Like, we're so blind to what's going on. Well, there we go. I hear the music, Timur. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
We'll have Timur back, I am sure, as often as she can get up here from San Diego. Thanks for being here. We will be back next week.